Welcome to Cure America. I'm Star Parker. Well, it's another new day in Washington, D.C. And some of the gains Christians were able to make on some really important issues, pro-life and pro-family policies, religious liberty, and pushing back excessive regulations and allowing the marketplace to thrive by reductions in taxes, well, they're being overturned by the current administration. President Biden is pushing through many policies through executive order without the Congress, the equal branch of government, who are supposed to be making the laws. Well, as alarming as his agenda, some of his nominees, woo, this new president, I'm telling you, I don't know if he's doing it on his own, but he's naming to head some government agencies and departments some really radical people. And one of these agencies, the Office of Management and Budget, it holds the purse strings for our federal government. OMB prepares the federal budget proposals that the president sends then up to the Congress. We're talking about the allocation of spending for almost $5 trillion of taxpayer funds. The power of this agency is tremendous. Well, President Biden accepted the withdrawal of his first nominee for director of OMB. Her name is Nara Tandem. She was making numerous members really uncomfortable because she had personally attacked them and disparaged them for years via her Twitter account. So some of the congressmen didn't feel real comfortable about that, so they expressed their displeasure. So the talk now is that Shalanda Young, Biden's nominee for deputy director, may be bumped up to the director's job. Well, this is not good news. For conservatives, Young's potential nomination is just as alarming, Ms. Young, if not more, because Ms. Young, she believes that the Hyde Amendment should not be reauthorized, despite having been reauthorized every year since it first began in law in 1976. The amendment is named after its sponsor, the late Illinois Representative Henry Hyde. It was passed 3 years after the Roe v. Wade decision. That decision legalized abortion across the country. So some people thought, nah, we don't want to be a part of this. So Hyde prohibited the use of federal taxes for abortion, except in some cases, danger of the life of the mom, incest, rape. In Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court may have concluded that a woman had a right to destroy her unborn child, but the Hyde Amendment said that the federal government could not force taxpayers to pay for it or to participate in it. And in fact, in 2020, Gallup poll showed that 47% of Americans still believe abortion is morally wrong, and only 44% said abortion is morally acceptable. That's a high number, but I tell you, it's not as many as say it's morally wrong. And for most of his political career, our Catholic president had supported the Hyde Amendment. But all of a sudden, in 2019, as he aspired to win his party's presidential nomination, Joe Biden had a change of heart. President Biden now talks of Congress ending the Hyde Amendment as part of his commitment to providing comprehensive health care for all women. His nominee for deputy director of OMB, whoa, she goes even further. She says eliminating the Hyde Amendment is a matter of economic and racial justice because it most significantly impacts Medicaid recipients who are low income. Economic and racial justice? Look, we talked about this before on a show. That this administration thinks being a poor black woman or being a poor Hispanic or a poor white woman for that matter means not having a right to destroy your child only, but also having a right to use other people's monies to pay for it. Even though almost half of American taxpayers think abortion is morally wrong. We gotta wonder what is so sick in our culture that 44% of Americans think it's okay to kill what God calls his reward, and why so few are concerned about having a potential OMB director that thinks every American should participate in this crime against humanity. The Charlotte Lozier Institute, it estimates that the Hyde Amendment saves some 60,000 unborn babies every year. And since we know that each of these saved babies has the imprint of God written into the DNA of their heart, of their lives, as they are fearfully and wonderfully made in his image, and that each of them could potentially bring something unique and special into this world. I thought we should talk with Chuck Donovan himself, the president of the Charlotte Logier Institute, to get his insight into the confirmation hearings that are taking place and the plans of the Biden administration. The Charlotte Logier Institute is a research arm of the Susan B. Anthony List, which is a wonderful pro-life organization here in Washington. And they've been fighting for many years on behalf of the unborn and also at the state level. Chuck Donovan has served at the National Right to Life Committee, the Heritage Foundation. He's been on the forefront of this fight and many other fights for many, many years. We're also going to speak to a new person in my life, Connor Simmelsberger. He's from the Family Research Council, a young man, and he's the Director of Federal Affairs for Life and Human Dignity. And he's been tracking these nominees that the Biden administration's putting up, and he's been reporting on many of their alarming views. So we want to talk to him. We're going to also have a distinguished panel. We're going to discuss these things on how our nation's 50-year-old debate regarding abortion has now diminished to be about economic and racial justice. Oh, is there anything that can be done to stop the Biden administration from ramming through these radical progressives to head major agencies and departments here in the federal government? That's what I'm gonna ask my panel. I've got some amazing experts to help us sort through the noise of the news so that we can try to find some truth this week on Cure America. So let's dive into today's topic, Hyde versus Biden, right after this important message.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. We've got a new year in front of us, 2021, and new opportunities. But for many, we've got the same old problem. There's that emptiness in your heart, and you've been trying to fill it with drugs and alcohol and sex and everything else, but it just doesn't work. You've been searching, but you don't even know what you're searching for. God is the only one who can fill that vacuum. If you've never trusted His Son, Jesus Christ, as your Savior, do that today. You see, Jesus took our sins. He died on the cross. He was buried, and God raised Him to life. And He can come into your heart and change you and forgive you. Just pray this prayer with me right now. Just say, God, I'm a sinner. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I believe Jesus is your Son, and I want to trust Him today as my Savior. I want to invite Him to come into my life and take control. If you prayed that prayer, call that number that's on the screen. Do it right now. Call that number. Someone's willing to speak with you right now. Call that number. God bless.
A lot of important topics, so I want to get into these issues with a dear friend, Chuck Donovan. I told you a little bit about him in my introduction. He's the president of the Charlotte Logier Institute. It's an organization that promotes a deeper understanding of the values of human life through scientific research. I'm so glad that you're with me.
My pleasure, Star.
This is a very interesting time here in Washington, D.C. We're seeing not only the unraveling of so many of the things that were done under the last administration on behalf of pro-life, but there's amazing concern now that this administration is putting in place people in departments and agencies that have a really radical worldview. So first I want to get into Charlotte Logier. Tell us a little bit about the Institute.
Sure. Well, we founded the Institute almost 10 years ago. We were looking for a name of someone who would embody what the Institute was about, which is science, statistics for life, and also an embrace of the best things about feminism, women having opportunities for work and to fulfill their dreams, but also pro-life conviction. And what we found was a physician, 19th century, who had published an article in The Revolution. And being a part of Susan B. Anthony List, this physician, pro-life woman, who said some very remarkable things about the unborn and dedicated her life to the unborn, but also had the tragedy. She died at age 25, bearing her third child.
Oh, my.
So it kind of symbolizes well that, women do pay a price for childbearing. It's not the easiest thing in the world.
Sure.
So she fit our worldview in every respect, so we're honored to have her name.
Well, and it is a miracle. It's an awe. And there was so much respect for having those children, and people would, at any cost, go ahead with the birthing of a baby.
Yeah.
And times were much more difficult then, and now it seems like we have an administration that can't let up on killing your offspring. We have people and data showing that almost half the country says, well, there's nothing morally wrong with abortion. But there is concern. You've been working in this area for quite some time. You were at Heritage, you were at Family Research. research. You've been all over in public policy. What has shifted to where now we're seeing such radical in charge of different departments and agencies that here again, the pro-life community has to be very aggressive and active?
I think part of it is there's more polarization on a variety of issues. There are more actors out there who are determined to sow division and to use very harsh language when people disagree. Mm. So we've had 6 or 7 states in the last couple of years who have gravitated toward allowing abortion basically up to birth without limit, resisting born alive protection legislation in the Congress, for example. I was defeated again recently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the beginning, when I worked on Capitol Hill, new Congressman Henry Hyde, who wrote the pro-life Hyde Amendment, worked with other members who introduced other funding limits. And you know what? You had basically equal parties, portions of both parties, Democrat and Republican, were pro-life.
Right.
And they were a majority. So there's been a consensus on the Hyde Amendment, and even now that's under risk with the Biden administration.
Let's talk about it a little bit. Get into the Hyde Amendment, because, you know, we're talking about folks who may not follow public policy,
sure,
but are very concerned about what's happening in culture, what's happening in the country. And when you think about pro-life, Roe v. Wade is one aspect that we have to be vigilant to say this is a crime against humanity and it shouldn't be legal in the first place. But then there were protections put in place for the taxpayers not to have to then fund abortion. Joe Biden himself for years was for the Hyde Amendment. Why in the world are we looking at now some of his nominees that are saying, well, let's get rid of Hyde, and he's saying, well, maybe we should.
Well, an argument is being made, and Shalanda Young is one particular who will be at the Office of Management and Budget. And it's, a, for many people, an obscure agency, but they clear on everything the agencies do. If they're pressuring for changes, they're going to happen faster. And she has said that it's a matter of justice and equity, I think.
Yeah. Economic and racial justice.
Yes, that's the phrase she used.
Tying it in. Yeah, it's fascinating because you also, I wanted you to finish your thought, but I want to get into a study that you also saw. You saw some research, you cited it, about the devastating and disproportionate impact on black women for her to say now, oh, well, no, this is about racial justice. But go ahead, you were talking about her becoming a nominee over there.
I agree, Star. And you kind of can't get around the question, is abortion a good thing?
Right.
It used to be Democratic consensus to some degree under the Clinton administration that abortion should be rare. That is not what we're looking at now. And when you repeal the Hyde Amendment, what you guarantee is that abortions will increase. One of our studies, Star, looked at states that have had the Hyde Amendment in effect and then changed their policy, funded abortion, and then reverted. We could track the changes in abortion rates and to whom the abortion rate increased. And what you find is the history of the Hyde Amendment has saved 2.4 million lives.
Wow.
Roughly a third of those would be minority women. You're talking 800,000 people now walking the streets of our cities, living lives, having their own families. So it's affected many others besides that 2.4 million. But that's what Hyde's about.
Yeah.
It's a life-saving amendment. You want that to be equal when you're saving lives. You want to save everybody you can.
That's exactly right. And I'm so glad that you've been working in particular with Susan B. Anthony's work, the Susan B. Anthony List work in the different states. So give us some good news. What is happening right now in the states? Because of the concern here in Washington, especially as the Biden administration came in, a whole lot of the pro-life groups said, uh-oh, got to go back to the states. Let's go and try to, you know, do what we can to protect the innocent.
Yeah, it's been a big adjustment because the Trump years, though, they seemed to fly by. There were policies enacted that went further in protecting life than anything before.
Boom. I mean, we hadn't seen something like that. In fact, some were calling him the most pro-life president since Reagan that we actually saw such aggressive activity to save the innocent.
I can be grudging because I worked 8 years for President Reagan.
Yeah.
He was fantastic.
Yeah.
But the Trump policies were superior in many ways. He delivered on Title X. He expanded limits on abortion overseas, which reflect on the character of the United States. Other countries have a reason to mistrust our social impulses here. And that list keeps growing. But the movement to the states is a practical one. Mm-hmm. And also recognizes, just to give you the volume, over 400 pieces of pro-life legislation have been introduced this year.
Wait, over 400 this year, like meaning 2021?
Yes, in the States.
Wow.
And at least six of them have had significant enactments. We're still early in the calendar year.
I've been following what's happening in South Carolina, which I was just very impressed about. But yeah. Go ahead, 400, wow, this is impressive.
Well, they cover almost every issue you can think of. Informed consent, the casual distribution of the abortion pill, which they now hope to distribute via the mails, that women will have do-it-yourself abortions.
God, this is horrible.
Can you imagine a half century after the claim that do-it-yourself abortion was the reason why you need to have Roe v. Wade? Well, now the abortion industry is doing the very thing they presumably deplored a half century ago.
Now, that's an irony right there. But yes. I think one of the things that breaks my heart most about that so-called opportunity to revert back to what they call the clothes hanger era is that the heartbreak to watch, to look at your little baby in the toilet. See, they're not being honest about what happens. This is life that's growing in the womb of his mother. Now you're going to just take a pill and sit there alone? This is devastating. Yeah. So you're saying that now in the States, though, we're seeing some pushback against that, so that's a good thing.
We definitely are. There's a model bill Susan B. Anthony has crafted, and we're working with cooperating pro-life groups in the States. Okay. You know, I think almost a century ago, we lived through something called the age of anxiety. Mm. And I think now we're in the age of isolation. Mm. And things like COVID have only increased that, and there are opportunistic people exploiting that. But the idea that you would be home alone and turn your home into an abortion clinic, and you become the agent. Right. Now, nothing good about an abortion clinic, but it has the cloak of a medical practice. Mm-hmm. But with the abortion pill, the woman can't really be apart from what happens to the baby. And as you pointed out, she'll often see what happens.
And this is not a good thing. It's not good for all of us to then be forced to pay for all of these movements through the repeal of Hyde. What do you think is going to happen? I have another guest coming that will get into more of the specifics about how to combat what's going on in these hearings. Is there an opportunity for us to fight these confirmations and maybe get the second of or lesser of the evil? What are your thoughts on what's happening and the aggressiveness of this administration? And is there a window to say, no, not that one. I'm sorry, we've just got to move on.
I think we'll lose one or two, maybe in the near term. But I think we've got a very good chance already to have shown that the country has an awful lot of pro-life voices.
Yeah.
The proposals in the States are so widespread.
Yeah.
People in the polls definitely don't want to pay for or promote abortion.
Right.
They don't want their nation associated with this practice.
Yeah.
And they know it has a negative effect on those it targets. So I think we can lock this up. We're going to have a loss or two in the meantime, but I think the American people are ready to push back.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much for being my guest today. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear about so much activity in the States, and I'm thinking that you're going to enjoy some of the panel discussion as well. So I'll be right back with my panel. Well, Chuck sure gave me a lot of hope. I'm very excited now. It's dark here in Washington, D.C., and yes, they still have the barbed wire up. So that was a very, very nice interview, and I hope you get to know him a little bit more and the work that they're doing over there at Charlotte Lozier Institute and Susan B. Anthony List. Now I have my distinguished panel. You know I love my panel because they really help us sort through the noise of the news. And so I have Jonathan Alexander again with us. Alexandre,
yeah.
I have to say it
French
correctly.
Pronunciation.
I do. I'm trying to do my English properly now that I have a television show. I must. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Senior Counsel for Government Affairs at Liberty Counsel Action. I always have to say the action part because if it gets too political, we don't want to get Liberty Counsel in trouble and get you canceled. You almost got us canceled.
You're associating with hate groups, right?
That's right. That's what they told us at the Vimeo. You're associated with hate groups. You guys are on the hate list.
Impossible. I mean, doing the work of God and trying to be salt and light in the world, and the folks that don't like it put us on a hate group list with a lot of other of our good friends that are doing the same similar work.
It's good company.
Yeah.
You guys are doing excellent work. I love Matt and Anita Staver, and I'm telling you, for you represent them here in Washington is a good thing. Constitutional attorney. And now I have a new guest, Claire and Kritian. Chrétien, she says it's French for Christian, her last name. She's a journalist and editor of LifeSite News. She's writing about abortion, human dignity, bioethics, politics, related issues. She holds a bachelor degree from the University of Alabama, where you first became involved in political activism.
Roll Tide.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome. Because I tell you, the just the encouragement of youth with us and in this movement brings light to my eyes, mostly because I have two grandchildren that are the light of my life, and I want the country to be saved for them. So thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, and Richard, you're helping save the world.
We're trying.
I know. I've seen your work. President of Americans for Limited Government. Yeah, you need to try. Richard Manning, I'm wondering about how much you're getting done these days to limit the role of government. But thanks for being here with us again.
I appreciate it. And, you know, every day you sit there, you get up, you pick a fight, you try to do the best you can. And tough times, but we got to keep punching.
Yeah, we do. Claire, I'm going to start with you because we're talking, you're a journalist, so you're out and about, and especially with LifeSite News, there must be a lot of buzz and concern about what we're seeing to hear that Hyde is on the chopping block. Tell us a little bit about what your insight is and what we should be concerned about.
Well, we should be terrified. We are seeing Democrats moving at lightning speed to enshrine taxpayer-funded abortion up to all, you know, through all 9 months of pregnancy up to birth, and complete attacks on the conscience rights of Americans. It seems that every day there's something worse happening, from the Equal Rights Amendment being revived in the U.S. House and that advancing to the Equality Act, which would basically redefine sex discrimination to mean a right to abortion. So under the Equality Act, should it become law, and President Biden has said it's a priority for him to make it law, should the Equality Act become law, doctors who provide prenatal care could potentially lose their jobs for refusing to commit abortions. And this is a very dire situation. People need to be aware that this fight is being had, and there's, you know, there are millions of lives at stake here.
Jonathan, we talked about, you know, pronunciation. Mm-hmm. And the Equality Act, it just sounds so wonderful. It sounds like something we would really desire. But there are a whole lot of things that are in there that are just absolutely devious. And when you think about, you know, to put in our doctors at risk, those that have made a vow to protect the innocent and to protect life. But it's even more than that. You're a constitutional lawyer. How are we going to get through this time?
Yeah, on that doctor front, so doctors have a commitment to do no harm. Okay. But here you have an Equality Act that says you take all the training that you have and we're going to use it to promote this abortion complex, and you have no way of fighting back against it. In the past, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act has always been there for folks of religious convictions, doctors and nurses, even federally funded schools doing research, to be able to receive federal funds and not participate in abortion. But now you're having all those conscience protections taken away. The religious freedom is no longer a defense or a claim to be a backstop to help these individuals in court. And any time that a doctor is now performing his work, it'll be joined to this abortion complex. And it's a far cry from anything that we have in the states up until this point. Now to have the federal government forcing that on individuals is such an outrage.
Yeah, and then Hyde, Richard, we're talking now not just our people of faith having to be concerned about being able to even exercise that constitutional protected right, but pay for it? We have to pay for it?
Yeah, by ending Hyde, they're effectively forcing everybody to pay for abortions. Abortion is no longer a choice, it's a mandate. The mandate's on American taxpayers, and they're being mandated to pay for something which they feel, a majority of American taxpayers, feel is immoral. And that's kind of an unseen consequence of the last election. We saw this election where people were voting on all sorts of things. We had a candidate who essentially was hidden for 6 weeks and didn't talk about anything. And I think a lot of Americans are waking up and saying, wait a second, I didn't vote for this. And the way you deal with it is you have to let your legislators know that you didn't vote for this, and you expect them to not govern from the extreme, but from the middle.
But how do you know that they didn't? I mean, Claire, help me out here, because the data, you're in the journalistic world, you're seeing data. The data showing that a whole lot of Americans kind of like this idea of abortion. They kind of like this idea of LGBTQ. They kind of like doing everything that God says don't do and not doing everything he said to do. So is there a fascination with just sin that has entered into the public square?
Well, the problem is we've got public schools teaching that abortion's healthcare, that you can pick your gender starting when you're five. We have the media totally pushing this agenda. We have Hollywood, all the mainstream movies are pushing it. So our culture has become so degenerate that it's poisoned the hearts and minds and souls of a lot of people. And you know, politics is downstream from culture. So some of this really toxic culture is now manifesting itself in our laws and going to probably destroy the lives of all the people who have so far managed to survive this onslaught of degeneracy and immorality.
Well, it seems that way, and especially with you mentioned the public schools, the government-controlled, union-controlled schools, but they're in opposition now to the private schools. And so you have a lot of parents that are sending their children to private Christian schools still trying to instill a worldview. What's going to happen? Are Christian people who are putting a worldview, taking their children to church on Sunday morning, teaching them that these are the precepts of God, that this is truth? What happens? Is this underground for this particular group of people now?
Yeah, if the Equality Act becomes law, Christian schools are absolutely on the chopping block, and so are churches.
When you say on the chopping block, meaning they can be run out of business?
Absolutely. Lose their tax-exempt status,
That's right.
Potentially be shut down, lawsuits
yeah.
brought against
That's
them.
Right. That's right.
And this is for things like not letting adult men in the bathroom with little girls, or having an all-male priesthood, or teaching the biblical truth that there are two genders, man and woman, and that we're made in the image of God, and you can't mutilate yourself into being another gender.
You know, and people think you guys are just exaggerating this. This is not an exaggeration.
I mean,
when you think about they're adding to the Civil Rights Act,
right.
This is what happened when you think about Bob Jones University, when they added the whole Civil Rights Act. They were like, well, you know, we separate the races here. They lost their tax exemption.
Right.
This is some serious stuff.
And it's the full force of the weight of government behind it. And the image to look at, well, remember in the 1960s, that young African-American girl that's being escorted into her school, an all-white school for the first time, that's an image that's an icon in the civil rights movement. Well, this is basically the same thing, taking U.S. Marshals, the full force of federal government, but instead of helping African-Americans have equal treatment, now they're forcing abortion, they're forcing the LGBT agenda, and they're using the full weight of government. Every agency is going to be tasked to enforcing this. And it's not just individuals that are receiving federal funding. This is any public accommodation, which they're trying to expand to include churches. This is any gathering, any individual that hangs a shingle. That means private doctors, private nurses, anyone that's in healthcare, they're trying to join the work of their hands to promoting abortion. And you know, for the folks watching, we usually have an abdication approach. We're saying, well, it's not me, it hasn't affected me yet. Mm-hmm. But scripture tells us all the time, if you mingle your funds through the Hyde Amendment, if you mingle your resources and your provision, if you join or allow yourself to be joined into the work of evil, you're going to incur that same judgment, the same judgment that happened to Egypt, the same judgment that happened to Babylon, Israel. If you're in that position where you're joining in, you're going to get that same judgment. And so I think Christians need to wake up and realize that we're a part of this too.
And not just on that other side, we're talking here, because they're putting people in seats of power, Richard, in the departments and the agencies, their commissions. This is insidious.
At the Health and Human Services, they wanted Xavier Becerra to be the secretary. He's the one who initially prosecuted the guy who went in, and uncovered the baby body parts scandal at Planned Parenthood's.
Right.
They didn't prosecute Planned Parenthood. Who was selling the body parts. They prosecuted the journalist who went in and uncovered it. And he still faced prosecution, he's faced civil penalties. He's still being abused right now by the legal system in California. If you think that's a good thing, you're gonna love these guys in D.C.
Well, I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do to stop them, because they are in confirmation hearings right now.
They are in confirmation hearings, and the fact is, senators need to know right now that there is no excuse for rubber stamping Biden nominees. And this isn't just blanket partisanship. The fact is, the Biden nominees, by and large, are so radical that they don't hold up to basic scrutiny. Right. And Becerra's record is just that radical when it comes to his record as a prosecutor, not to mention his record in Congress, where he was basically, we're looking at an HHS that will demand, have abortion on demand as a first priority in terms of everything they do, every dollar they spend, and the mandates that come out of various agencies they control. It's going to be a disaster, and the people need to tell their senators no to Becerra and no to other radical nominees.
All just so extreme. I'm wondering if people are getting that message. Claire, you're at LifeSite News. I mean, you're a news source. Are people responding when they hear this type of truth? I know that the first inclination is probably shocked, because you have a lot of folks who just don't follow it. They're, especially the dear ones that get up and go to church on Sunday and go to work on Monday. They're just raising their children, and then their culture and their country is just slipping away. Are you getting information out fast enough?
I think so. You know, pro-life Americans are stunned at the far-left extremists who are now totally seizing power and taking over. At LifeSite, we actually have a voter voice. And so we have a system where if you're reading one of our articles about some of these terrible nominees, you can actually just click a button and it will connect you to email your senators, call your senators. There's a message pre-written, or you can write your own. And so this is a really easy way for people to make their voices heard.
Okay.
Just use the system, exactly, and flood the phones. Let them know that if they just rubber stamp these Biden nominees, there are going to be consequences.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of consequences. I'm going to talk a little bit with Connor from FRC, and then when we come back, I want you guys to get into some more of the solutions, especially Jonathan. I need to know, is the court, you know, the left used it all the time.
Right.
They were always in court, and now it might be our turn to say, okay, that might be the only way to slow some of this down. I'll be right back. I have a special guest, and you don't want to miss him. And then I'll be back with my distinguished panel. Well, I'll be back with the panel for some solutions. They had a whole lot of complaining to do and what's gone wrong. So we'll talk about that after my very special interview to get into some of these others that are up for confirmation, that are being nominated. I have with me Connor Simmelsberger. Did I almost say it right?
You did, right on the money.
He serves as the Director of Federal Affairs at the Family Research Council, some call it FRC.org, and he has done tremendous research on the Biden administration and what they're doing with these confirmations. Thank you for being here with me.
So great to be on today.
Well, it's called Cure America, and that's what we're attempting to do, but I'm fascinated that you're such a young man who is now in such a big space and during such a difficult time. Mm-hmm. Where'd you come from? How'd you get here?
Yeah, well, really just following the Lord's will, honestly. Hail from a small town in Pennsylvania and was fortunate enough to go to the University of Maryland, study the politics and policies during the end of the Obama era, right at the beginning of the Trump era, and just felt God calling me to use the skills and abilities he gave me to fight for the unborn, fight for marriage, seeing the Obergefell decision that came down while I was in college, and the aftermath that has had in our country, just really needing to put those skills to help fight for the good causes that our Christian faith gives us in the policy realm. And that's how I ended up here doing this work.
This is amazing. And you're encouraging me because we need young energy. It seems like the culture is so lost and people are going down the path of secularism. So every now and then you find someone that takes their faith and their Christianity seriously. I love it. But there are a whole lot of people in this town who do not take their faith seriously. Mm-hmm. They're not even afraid of God. Now they're so out with everything he says don't do, they want to do it. Everything he says don't do, they're doing it. Everything that he says do, they don't want to do it. And now they're being put in really incredibly large spaces. Our concern right now is on this Shalanda Young. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this young woman who is now supposedly moving up the food chain to get to where she controls the purses of our entire economy, actually. I guess you'd say government economy, but it's about $5 trillion.
Yes, that's exactly right. The first nominee Biden put forward, Neera Tand, unfortunately had some opposition from the Democrat side, so she had to withdraw. But in her place, they put Shalonda Young, longtime staffer for the House Appropriations Committee, which is tasked with putting all the funding out, all our tax dollars spending it. And so she would be nominated to almost run our Office of Management and Budget, which has great say over all federal policies, as well as where our money goes, just like you said. And the big concern with her, some of our great allies in the Senate asked her questions specifically on the Hyde Amendment, which again stops our taxpayer funds from going to abortion. And while she gave the canned answer that I will follow the law, as every federal nominee needs to say, she expounded upon that to say, but I believe this policy is racist and discriminatory and essentially needs to be kicked to the can.
You know, it's interesting because every single time the Republicans and or conservatives ask questions of a Democrat nominee, knowing that it's controversial, knowing that culturally it's unacceptable to the majority of Americans, they play the race card. They go to, this is about racial justice, to try to set a different tone. Do you think that with this particular candidate it's going to work? Are people really going to buy into this idea that, you know, that this is racial justice to kill the unborn in disproportionately black and poor women?
It's really unfortunate that that's the case. And you know what? With her, I really don't think the American people will buy it, and here's why. Because at the same side, they're saying that the policies that protect unborn life, like you said, especially in you know, communities with women of color. But on the flip side, the other side of the mouthpiece, what they're saying is we don't want to give good health care for these women. You look at D.C., women of color have such a hard time just to get basic health care, good hospitals, maternal health care when they want to go through with their pregnancy. But don't worry, there's an abortion clinic on nearly every street corner that they can go to. Right. So it's so hard to take them seriously that this is the cause they champion, but at the same time, they really don't care about expanding and protecting maternal health.
You know, that's interesting, and I'm so glad that you brought it up because these are the same ones that then fight our pregnancy care centers. Mm-hmm. Every time we turn around, anyone that's trying to offer any help to someone that may be in a crisis, may be in a challenging situation, that their only answer is, well, just kill the child and or depend on government if you're deciding to keep the child. And there are other alternatives. But Connor, while I have you, I don't want to run out of time because, you know, while Miss Young is one concern, Becerra, HHS secretary nominee. I mean, this guy, as a congressman, he voted against the Born Alive Act. This is serious for him to be over at HHS. HHS, why don't you explain to our public what HHS is and why it's important that we make sure that we are watching what these guys are doing once they're nominated and then they are actually confirmed to these big positions?
Yes, so HHS, Department of Health and Human Services, is actually the largest government agency we have by budget, over $1 trillion running Medicaid, Medicare, our major health care programs. So talk about putting a partisan, a pro-abortion advocate there during a global pandemic, the largest we've seen in 100 years. You can tell this is just an ode to the abortion industry, which helped President Biden get elected. And it's so unfortunate because Becerra, being a congressman for 25 years, like you mentioned, voted against almost every pro-life policy that came across the U.S. Congress. He's even more to the left than the man who nominated President Biden. When Biden was a senator from Delaware, he voted actually for the partial birth abortion ban back in the 2000s. Becerra, he voted against it.
Yeah, and the reason that we're bringing this up is because this is serious. Now we're talking born alive. The baby has been born. And they want to kill it. Mm-hmm. And what's also over at HHS is that Office of Population Affairs. And this is why I'm kind of very concerned that with these radical extremes in charge of these departments, we're going to start seeing people that are running the different agencies inside doing little things that will pull against God and against the scripture. Mm-hmm. Look at Levine. Let's talk about Rachel Levine. This is Deputy HHS Secretary, transgender, took her mother out of assisted living before the pandemic, so she's problematic even when it comes to her motivations, and yet we're seeing significant, support for her to have this big office over in the Health and Human Services.
Yes, if Becerra's nomination didn't make any sense, neither does this one. Somebody who ran my state, Pennsylvania, the COVID response there, and just like New York, the big scandal we're seeing with the New York nursing home deaths, Pennsylvania was the exact same scenario, same exact policy in place. Levin pulled her own mother out of a nursing home, but put COVID patients back in. That shows you that somebody cares more about them and their personal lives than the general public, not somebody at all that should be running the largest public health agency during a global pandemic. But outside outside of that, his tenure there has used it in Pennsylvania, I know this all well, to advance the LGBTQ agenda and really framing the issue of, you know, transgender rights, making it less about medicine but more about an ideology, not actually helping children that may struggle with gender dysphoria, may struggle with these issues, instead of actually getting them the proper care they need and counseling, instead just forcing an ideology, helping them to make life-changing transformations to their bodies and their minds that just affect them for the rest of their lives.
And that's younger and younger. This is serious stuff. This is very serious, and we're going to run out of time, so I've just got to know, what can we do? Is there anything that can be done to stop it? What should the people be doing? If it doesn't help to call their senators and say, you know what? You don't do this, don't do this. Now, we know we're going to end up with just the lesser of the evil, but I'd rather it be a little bit lesser.
It does. This is the time to engage, so much so. While it might feel like we're out of control, we know God is in control, but at the same time, we need to do what we can to stay informed, not from the big mainstream media that's just going to sell you the canned speech, but organizations like ours, Family Research Council. We've done a great tracking project to give you all the information you need about these nominees, what they're doing. So stay engaged. But then again, activate yourselves with your members of Congress. Get to know them, your senators especially, because they are the ones that are going to get to push these nominees through. They are the ones that have the power to say yes or no to these nominees.
Some people think it doesn't matter. They say, but if I call over there, first of all, I don't even know what to say, and I know that FRC will help them know what to say. But even if they just called and just said, hi, I live in such and such a state, and I don't want you to do this. I don't want you to vote positive for these folks. Is that enough? You know, many people have never engaged politically because they think our country was founded so that they didn't have to. They elect their officials, and the officials are going to do the right thing by them. We're not seeing that. So does it matter if they pick up that phone and say, I want to leave a message for my senator?
It surely does, because you look at people like Senator Joe Manchin, right, state of West Virginia. He's always on that line. He was the one that came out opposed to Neera Tanden, who we mentioned, who had to withdraw. So that's one great example. We hope many more can come. And, you know, it can seem like we can't stay engaged. We just had this big election in November 2020. We have to wait so long to cast our vote again. We hope it's a secure election the next time around. But calling your senators, making sure they know what you, from their state or district, care about, and that matters for when comes time for them to be reelected. So it surely does matter. Whether we get the results now or that's a victory down the road, it so matters to stay engaged and activate yourself with your members of Congress.
Well, we've seen some of the opposition work as well even now. You know, like you said, some of the nominees, at least the left knows we're watching, so we might not get the extreme of the nominees, but there are some concerns. The list is long about some of these folks that I really wanted to ask Connor about. They're strategically placing them throughout every department, every agency, every committee. We're in trouble as a nation, so I thank you for the work that you guys are doing at FRC, and that we'll continue to do that work and partner with us here at the Center for Urban Renewal and Education so that we can get the truth out to you, but also to help push back darkness. So appreciate you being with me, and I will be with my panel right after this message. With an action plan, you call them. So I have my panel here to say, will the calls make a difference? I'm hoping they will. I have Jonathan Alexander, a constitutional attorney, and he's saying that maybe we might go back into the courts. That might be a good idea.
I think so.
Thank you.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the judges that Trump put in place are constitutional judges. They're pro-life judges.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so we have about 222 new federal judges that should be able to take to task this defunct decision of Roe v. Wade and any other really unconstitutional law that comes out of Congress.
There's some hope. I'm so excited. And Claire, you're saying that you're seeing opportunities in journalism. Claire Christian. Christian is she's a journalist and editor for LifeSite News, and you're starting to see some activity there, and you're young, and so we're seeing energy there to say maybe the culture is not unredeemable after all.
Well, we see our readers getting so activated and calling their senators, signing petitions, and speaking up, you know, in their own communities, in their own churches, letting other like-minded believers know about these threats to our liberties and freedoms, and that is, you know, really a sign of hope, and I think more and more people are starting to wake up.
Well, I like that, Richard. We've been together a long time. Right. We wrote Necessary Noise together.
Yes, we did.
And he's also the president of Americans for Limited Government, Richard Manny, so maybe we'll limit the government after all.
Hey, you know what? People do have a say in everything, and they need to exercise it. One of the things, though, I would really encourage people to do is not enough just to contact your legislators. Find groups like CURE that you like. Follow them so that those groups can communicate with you outside of social media.
Yeah.
Because communicating with groups outside of social media, or people outside of social media, is necessary in this day of cancel culture.
That's exactly right.
So contact your legislators. But if you want to learn more, sign up for those groups that you'd like so they can communicate with you exactly what needs to be done, exactly when it needs to be done.
I love it. And I like that you pointed out our work at the Center for Urban Renewal and Education, because we are fighting poverty, restoring dignity through messages of faith and freedom and personal responsibility, and we're losing those opportunities because people are getting canceled. But on the other hand, we're starting to see, you know, where sin abounds, grace much more. So I'm pretty excited about that. And we were talking on this side, let's talk a little bit about how do we cure it. I mean, this show's called Cure America, and I really believe that there's hope. There's hope in the gospel. There's hope for change. We're encouraged that our groups are growing and people are becoming much more informed. But it's those same people that got us in this dilemma. So as we're talking now about the Equality Act. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the repeal of Hyde potentially because of these appointments, people that are the bureaucrats of Washington that they don't get to call.
Right.
Now we're looking at the Office of Management and Budget having a radical extreme. I mean, this Ms. Young is radical and extreme. So what do we do in these situations? How are we going to push back darkness when the darkness is just the bureaucracy of Washington, what some call the deep state and others call the dark state?
Look, I think one of the reasons why they're being so extreme in the legislature, being so extreme in their appointments, is because they're insecure. And that's one thing that we have to pay attention to. They stand on very shaky ground if Roe v. Wade's going to be their standard. They stand on very shaky ground if the Obergefell decision is going to be their standard. So they have to put these people in place that are in power, that are going to push us further and further to the left, because they're insecure, knowing that ultimately these things can't sustain culture. And that's where the voice of the Christian needs to be risen up and say that, no, these things aren't good for culture. And look at the other side. They're backing down. They're doubling down in their stance because they have to, because they realize it's not sustainable.
But Jonathan, how do you say that when we've had Roe now 40-something years? I mean, my goodness. And then the Obergefell, the culture seems to have wanted to move on from LGBTQ. In fact, when you look at it, even some of what we might consider conservative outlets have bought this idea that God didn't mean it when he said that this is an abomination and don't do it.
And I think you're right. And I think it's a call for the greater Republican message, the greater conservative message, not to abandon these moral issues. I think that's obviously the bedrock of this country, but the bedrock of the Conservative Party. And you're not going to have limited government. You're not going to have fair taxing if you forsake any of the moral principles that undergird what really should be conservatism.
Essentially, what they're doing is they're deconstructing the Republican coalition, what used to be the conservative coalition. Mm-hmm. You had cultural conservatives, you had national defense security conservatives, and economic conservatives. Mm-hmm. And that coalition was what was a majority in America. It's the Reagan coalition, essentially. It's the Trump coalition, essentially. Mm-hmm. But now what they're doing is they're deconstructing it by picking one side off and picking the cultural side off and making, and the national security people say, oh, they're not touching me. Economic people say, they're not touching me. And they're destroying the essence of the coalition that creates a majority in America. That's the political game that's being played. Is very real. And people who
do you think it's real because they infiltrated the Republican Party? Because I'm listening to what you're saying, and I don't know that this is like a Democrat strategy to say, let's just peel them off from each other.
It's the reality of what's been going on for 20 years.
Okay.
And it's but now they're in a position, the left is in a position in Washington, D.C., to forge ahead with an agenda. And because of dysfunction within the opposition party and the lack of unity in the opposition party,
okay.
you're not able to get 50 votes against somebody based upon an issue like they're going to promote abortion through HHS.
Right. Which has made now Manchin the most powerful senator here because you're I think that you're onto something, Richard, because we are starting to see that division. Well, I don't believe in all of this, and so then the left is on steroids when it comes to their agenda. Did they learn something from the Trump administration to say, get it done and get it done quickly while they're not watching? To Jonathan's point, Claire, are you sensing that this is an agenda that's being promoted that's against the will of the people, but if they do it quickly, maybe people won't notice?
Yeah, bulldoze through. Just bulldoze your way through. That's what they're doing. And, you know, on the point of, the coalition being infiltrated and the rise of LGBT, we're past L, we're past G, we're past B, we're on to T now, okay?
I don't know that we passed B, because they said it was about bisexual, but I'm not sure.
Well, bisexual...
They told us that Q was about just mocking themselves about queer, and then we found out it was questioning, and they put it in the kindergarten. So I agree with you, L, the G, I think they skipped that B.
The B is binary. Bisexual suggests there's a gender binary, and we can't have that.
Yeah, I think it's more than that.
It's all about the T and transing people and getting people locked in a life of unhappiness, getting people locked in this life of being a medical patient for your whole life, taking cross-sex hormones,
it's so sad.
Getting these elective surgeries to essentially amputate healthy body parts. That's why we have people like Rachel Levine, who the Democrats are putting in these really high positions of power. He wouldn't even condemn sex changes for minors, little kids.
Rachel, did y'all hear that? Rachel, this is really... Washington today. This is really bad. You know, you reminded me, I heard a story of the woman that she bought that lie and then she got born again and revisited her relationship with Christ and she's like, I'm a new person. I'm a woman again. I learned how to walk in high heels, but I'll never get my breath back. Mm.
I'll say to that point, the reason we ought to keep fighting for Hyde is because if the culture starts steering towards a direction, at least we have the backstop that people of faith, then their conscience will be protected. And it is a majority of people that don't want their federal funding or their taxpayer dollars to go to prop up abortion, to go to give to gender transition surgery. So the reason we fight for Hyde, the reason we fight for things like the Weldon Amendment is so individual states, their dollars don't have to go towards abortion. Mm-hmm. The reason we fight for church amendments is so that doctors and nurses don't have to participate in abortion or learn abortion even while they're in schooling. Mm-hmm. So the fight is still there.
Oh, the fight has to be there. In fact, Richard, you brought an interesting point during the break about the Equality Act and how does that impact even Roe?
Well, the Equality Act, and I'll ask Jonathan, he's the attorney. The Equality Act essentially normalizes abortion. It puts into law, federal law, that abortion is a desired outcome, a health outcome. How does that affect Roe and the basic argument about Roe v. Wade being created out of whole cloth and not having any legislative backdrop to justify it? How does that work?
Yeah, so Roe is a complete judicial fiction, right? It came out of nowhere, and now it's imposed on the entire country. What we've had until this point is the legislature never acquiesced to it. It was never a fundamental right. And so it goes back to the insecure point. They realize that they have to surround this defunct decision with legislature intent so that when Roe is challenged, and it's going to be and it has been, as it's consistently challenged, you can say, no, wait, this is what the people want because this is what the legislature wants.
So ultimately, the Equality Act, while we talk equality, it sounds all good. What it really is an affirmation of Roe.
And for that particular provision of it, the pregnancy and other related medical conditions, as they call it.
And so LGBTQ, XYZ stuff, even if you struggle with that and voicing that, if you want to contact your legislators about the Equality Act, you can focus on something simple. This congressionally legitimizes Roe v. Wade and must be stopped.
And in the context of what we're talking about, Hyde, keeping your money or your labor away from it, any defense that you would have had previously against Roe or against any of these other moral atrocities would be found in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. But that's exactly what they're attacking. It's not enough that they're imposing all these cultural differences on us, but they're saying you can't exempt yourself. You can't have any conscious protections.
That's the part that I think that we should be extremely concerned about. And I'm wondering if there will be opportunities to go to court. And you mentioned, some of the new conservatives that are serving on the courts because the Equality Act is inconsistent with the Civil Rights Act in and of itself because that already protects religion. So how is it that you can now pass an act, add it to the Civil Rights Act, that is in conflict, that says you don't even get religious protections. If you decide that you just don't want to buy into these ideas of abortion or these ideas of LGBTQ, even though the Bible's clear,
right,
you're canceled from culture.
Right. It's internal conflicts within the Equality Act that we have to keep fighting against.
And but then we're prepared to fight. How in the world is there anything we can do? How do you even? I mean, fighting in court's one part, but can't we stop it?
Can I answer that? Essentially, there's a 51 majority in the Senate, okay?
Right.
That requires every single senator on the left to vote in favor of the Equality Act, in favor of affirming Roe v. Wade, in favor of forcing people to spend their tax money on abortions. And so the question is if you live in a Democrat state, are your senators voting to compel that? And you have to let them know the power in all the pressure in D.C. is to go forward.
Right.
The people need to tell these senators, no, that's not what we want, and force them to hear it. And that's why contacting legislators through LifeSite, I've got it, Americans for Limited Government have the same system.
You guys have one too.
We do, yeah.
And so we all have the opportunity to contact through our sites. Bottom line is, if the legislators don't hear from you, if the senators in particular don't hear from you, and for Republican senators, no excuse.
Right.
You have to vote against the Equality Act.
Right.
So
right.
Hold everybody's feet to the fire,
right,
and then hold them accountable.
And not take any of them for granted either.
Yeah.
It's not a guaranteed
right.
win.
No,
for
well,
not.
That's the point. That's
and
the point.
Especially
yeah.
when they get weaker on these LGBT, and it sounds so good, Equality Act. How do you tell a senator to vote against an Equality Act? This is where language matters,
right.
And one of the reasons that the left keeps using confusing language when they try to pass these types of bills.
Yeah, it should be called the Inequality Act,
yeah,
because
really.
That's what it's about. And it's not about equality for unborn babies who are going to be targeted.
It's not about equality for people who practice their faith.
Right.
The Masterpiece Cake situation.
That's right.
That guy would be found guilty if this occurred.
That's
okay,
right.
If this were the law, you would be compelled to bake a cake for a wedding that you objected to.
Right.
You'd be compelled to provide photo services for a wedding you objected to.
That's right.
That's
flowers,
what this is about. You lose your individual freedom to make those choices based on your conscience because it's being imposed on you by a bunch of people in Washington, D.C., and it needs to be stopped, and that's why people have to, and I can't say this enough, this is going to happen unless the people tell their senators, we do not want this, and the people have to rise up and say no.
Do you think enough will rise up? We're down to the wire here.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And to bring it home even further, even if you're not in the wedding industry, if you're a doctor, if you know a nurse, or even your child is considering pre-med in school.
You're a teacher. You can't even believe it anymore.
It's so expansive. Yeah. If you're in your home and you want to sell a product on Etsy or the internet, it says that you are now part of what they can control. I mean, they're coming into your home. So
everything.
It's in your lap.
The Airbnb, you got to sign off on,
right,
we're going to make sure that you do trans. They don't even say, don't discriminate. They say you have to sign off,
right,
that you're going to.
You have to promote.
We're in trouble as the body of Christ. Is this turnaroundable?
We got to pray. I think we have to emphasize that too. We need to pray for our country.
Okay.
I mean, we really need to pray for cultural revival.
Okay.
And I think we need some divine intervention at this point.
I think you're absolutely
well, that's right. Really a good answer, because God does intervene in the affairs of man. He promised us that he would. And we've seen great miracles throughout scripture when things were really, really dark. They did turn around. So thank you, panel. You guys have encouraged me just like Chuck. I was just like, on this one, and here in Washington, it's not really a happy time, but with people like Richard, people like Claire, people like Jonathan, people like yourselves, getting informed on these issues. I'll be right back. As long as I keep my goal to cure America, I'm going to stay encouraged. I'm hopeful, especially with some of our guests and even our panel. We've heard some very troubling remarks from Biden nominees and the plans that they have for our country. Elections do have consequences, and unfortunately, we're seeing the results. I don't know if a lot of people voted for these guys really understood what they had in mind. Well, they're letting us know, and it's on steroids. So I suggest that President Biden reach back into his deck of cards and finds a new nominee to run the Office of Management and Budget. And he'll do it if you call, if you do what you were asked to do by our panel. Someone overseeing the disbursement of $5 trillion of taxpayer funds should have more respect for life and property than does Salanda Young. So you need to pick up your phone right now. You need to pick up your computer right now and text, email, or whatever you need to do to make sure you stop this nominee, and then you follow other ones to see if we can push back darkness yet one more time. Thanks for watching another episode of Cure America with Star Parker. And I hope that you will continue to think with me every week as we dive into national issues of culture, race, and poverty. They're in the headlines. Cure America with Star Parker is made possible by the generosity of our Cure family of friends that contribute to our nonprofit umbrella organization, the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. It's a policy institute based here in Washington, D.C. Cure is a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, so we welcome you to join our family of friends and sponsors to help expand our policy, our media, and our clergy programs. We want to reach more people to fight poverty and to restore dignity through messages of faith, freedom, and personal responsibility. I hope you also write me a note. If you want to share any thoughts or ideas, go ahead and email me. Now, may our good Lord bless you and keep you, and may He shine His light upon you and upon the life of all of those that you love.